Well, you made it through the first day. How many people were sleepy today? Look around. I had a feeling, yeah. Anyone restless? Yeah. Aches in the body? Busy mind? You're doing great. Right on schedule. First day of a retreat. And if you've done a number of retreats before, you know that that's part of the process. So that makes it a bit easier. If you haven't, you might have had the question come to you, what was I thinking when I signed up for this? But these first couple of days, really 3 days, I give myself 3 days, go through as much sleepiness and restlessness and body aches and busy mind, particularly sleepiness for most people, as I do. And then if I'm still there, I'll give myself another couple of days. The whole point is to give yourself the spaciousness to just be wherever you are without thinking that you're doing it wrong, and knowing that you're in a detox process, really. You're detoxing from stimulation and from all the involvements and emails and responsibilities and issues in your life. And so it takes a while to just let that go. Like if you've ever done a fast, the first day or two of a fast for many people is like, oh, food looks so good. And then after a while, when you clean out, it's like, oh gosh, who would want all of that? It really is important to understand the process and not give yourself any kind of a bad report card or thinking that you're doing something wrong. You're just doing what you should be doing, showing up as best you can. So we said yesterday that we're on this journey together, together and individually. And as I mentioned last night, this journey, a big part of this journey is opening to all the goodness inside of you with kindness, with compassion, with wisdom, with sincerity. I wanted to talk a bit about the process and some of the supports for this process tonight. What I'm in my mind calling opening to the whole show. And I thought that since I know that there are a number of people here who are on the newer side, as well as many people have done lots of practice, I want to spend at least the first part of this talk sharing a little bit about how I see mindfulness works. Remember I mentioned that line from the Buddha, there is one direct way, overcome sorrow, lamentation, and grief, despair, realize the highest happiness, and that is the establishment of mindfulness. So I wanted to talk about this very powerful and sometimes not clearly understood property, mental factor, called mindfulness, and why it is so profound and liberating. So first, a couple of things, or I should say four things I'll mention in my mind when I think of mindfulness and how it works. First, the word vipassana, you might have seen that word vipassana, V-I-P-A-S-S-A-N-A, which in Pali, the language that the Buddha's teachings have come down to us, translates as seeing things clearly, seeing things just as they are. So the first aspect is to simply know what your actual experience is. Not embellishing it, not pretending it's different than how it is, but just seeing it how it is. If you are calm, oh, here's calm. It doesn't have to be, this is the most amazing experience of my life, you know. Or if you're bored, if the mind goes, I'm going to die if that bell doesn't ring soon, you're not going to die. Oh, boredom, that's what's here. And if you're feeling sorrow or frustration, well, that's what's here. If you're feeling joy or love, that's what's here. So the beauty of this practice, something to keep in mind, is you're not trying to make anything particular arise. Like I said last night, you're just being here for the show, and whatever is here is the next moment of experience. As Ajahn Sumedho, one of the great Theravada monastics and somebody who's had an influence in me, he simply puts it this way: oh, this moment is like this. That's it. Oh, it's like this. This moment is like this. Just seeing things as they are, given that we're looking through our own subjective reality and we will see things through our own perception filtered by our life experience and predispositions. But all we can do is, as much as we can, objectively notice what our experience is without needing to embellish or diminish. Second aspect that I find really good, useful to keep in mind is being here in the present moment for your experience. This is not where many of us spend a lot of time. Maybe you've seen that as you looked at your mind today. We have an amazing capacity to be either thinking about the future with anticipation or trepidation. How many people had future thoughts today? Yeah. Thinking about the past, either with fun nostalgia or regret, or, oh, I can't believe I said that, or did I leave the gas on, or whatever it was, you know. How many people had thoughts about the past today? Yeah. Or lost in fantasy. Wouldn't it be nice if anybody had those thoughts? Right on schedule. It's just the human mind, and it takes some practice to arrive and land here in the present moment. You'd think, how hard could it be to just sit and know that you're breathing in and breathing out? Very hard. Challenging, at least to maintain it. And so let go of trying to be mindful in every moment. This is the definition of a fully enlightened being, by the way, if you want to go for that, which is a noble aspiration, but not to judge yourself for all the moments that you're not mindful. At the beginning, maybe you're mindful 2% of the time if you're sitting. Then it might, after a after a little while, maybe you're mindful up to 10% of the time. That's five times as much as when you started. Or maybe you start to be mindful a fair amount of the time. And if one has a chance to sit for a chunk of time, you go more and more into those moments of mindfulness start to build and stack up. And my teacher Joseph would say, this is an incentive for me in my own practice, see how many NPMs you can accumulate. NPMs, noticings per minute. I said, so that was my little game I played with myself. Not, I've lost, but just, more NPMs. Because what happens is as you stack up those NPMs, which is all about bringing yourself very lovingly back, as I said this morning, just, gone, come on back. Training, I didn't mention it here, but this image of training a puppy dog, maybe some people aren't familiar with it. It's a very useful analogy. You put a puppy dog on some paper, you don't want it to jump out in the street or jump on people, and so you want it to stay when you say stay. And then put it on the paper, runs off, you bring it back, stay, runs off, stay. And if you bring it back with love each time, it starts to get trained. Think of your mind as this cute, frisky, energetic puppy dog that doesn't know any better. Yeah. That really did happen in third grade. Well, come on back. What am I going to do when I grow up? Which can be a thought that occurs to you even when you're 60s or 70s. What am I going to do when I finally grow up? Come on back. Stay. And so if you bring yourself back in that consistent way, those noticings per minute start to stack up. And here's just a little underscoring of continuity, which Yuha had mentioned today. Continuity is a key. Not just sitting or walking, but the third part of the retreat is everything else. From brushing your teeth, let me be here brushing my teeth, or putting on your shoes, or taking a shower, or whatever. The more you can have that continuity as a kind of dance in life, the momentum starts to build. And here's how it works. I'm just kind of having my stream of consciousness. I will get to what I wanted to say tonight, but this seems useful. So if you keep on bringing yourself back, especially these first couple of days, in a very loving way, the mind, those noticings per minute start to stack up and accumulate, and the mindfulness gets stronger. When the mindfulness gets stronger, we see more and things are more interesting. When things are more interesting, we want to pay attention. And then it just builds on itself. You start seeing, the present moment is a pretty good place to hang out. Cool, I'm kind of here, I'm getting the idea. However, if you don't bring yourself back, or you're bringing yourself back with judgment, so it's a struggle, then you're not as apt to want to bring yourself back. And when you don't, the mindfulness doesn't get stronger and stays weak. When it gets weak, the present moment is not so interesting. And my fantasies or my thoughts about the future or my fears about the future or whatever or about the past are more compelling. And that's where we spend more of our time. And so it gets weaker and, I don't want boredom. What can I think about now? So every moment there's a choice point, and the more there is that continuity, the more it builds. And it really pays off if you do it for these first days with that spirit of kindness. So that's the second thing. Being, seeing things as they are, being here in the present, and just coming back consistently. Third aspect of mindfulness, as you start to pay attention to the present moment, or try to, something becomes increasingly clear. The present moment is continuously changing. The truth of impermanence. This might not be a revelation. If somebody asks you, do things change? You would probably say, oh yeah, things change. It's one thing to know it here. It's another thing to embody it with a lived experience. As you sit, notice how many thoughts you have. How many thoughts have you had today? Have you had one thought and it stayed? You probably have had thousands of thoughts. How many different sensations have you had today? Keeps changing. How many different moods have you gone through today? And you're seeing for yourself how everything changes. And when you really get this embodied understanding, not something you read about in a book or hear in a talk, but when you see, oh yeah, it makes a huge difference. Because then you realize that no matter what amazing peak experience or peak meditation you might have had, it's going to change. It doesn't last. And whatever difficulty you're facing, or even hell realm you might find yourself in, when you remember and realize and know everything changes, there's more of a willingness to meet it and see what you can learn in that encounter and deepen your compassion, if nothing else. And so rather than trying to get some amazing attaining experience, you see that life is just like these days on the retreat, continually changing, and your task is to be here for the ride rather than trying to make something happen. All by realizing everything is changing. And mindfulness, moment to moment, mindfulness reveals that. And then the fourth aspect that is so key to this whole process is noticing what's here without judging the experience. We have a very deep ingrained tendency to, if we happen to be present, have a critical review of whether life is passing or failing our test. Oh yeah, this is the way it's supposed to be. Or, hey, if I were running the universe, I'd do a much better job than this, or this is crazy, whatever. Rather, to let go of getting caught in the judgment and simply see how it is. So your mind might say, oh, then I'll just stop having any judging thoughts. Good luck. Because we have this tendency, but here's the trick. When you see the judging thoughts, instead of judging them, you know, oh, I was thinking, oh, that was a judging thought. Oh, I'm not supposed to be having a judging thought. I just had another one. And you can just keep on stacking up the judgments. At any point, you can simply notice, oh, and there's judging in the mind. And when you let go of judging the judging, here you are, free. So those four things, seeing things as they are, being here in the present, noticing how things change, and not getting caught in the judging mind, really the essence of this non-judging awareness, mindfulness. loving awareness, as Kirsten was sharing this afternoon. So what benefit comes from that? Maybe my fantasies are more interesting. I'll just mention a few benefits before I go on. One, you start to take a look at this mind and something becomes clear very quickly. The mind is completely out of your control. Maybe completely almost completely out of your control. You can train it, you can bring it back, but as far as what thought you have at any time, unless you're consciously thinking, okay, one and one are two, or, oh, let me think about this issue, left to its own devices, everything comes through. Now, that might sound discouraging. Oh, the mind is out of my control? It's actually great news. Because if your mind is out of your control, you don't have to blame yourself for whatever comes through. That's just, you know, that's an interesting, bizarre thought. Okay, we'll keep that one to ourselves. Well, hey, look at that thought. Check it out. What an amazing human being I am. They're all just coming through. And the more they come through and you don't have to jump on the train, the more choice you have as to what thoughts you want to give energy to and what thoughts you can just pass by. Like the Buddha under the Bodhi tree, as Mara is trying to knock him off of his seat and frighten him with armies attacking him or seducing him with beautiful celestial nymphs. Oh, you don't want to get enlightened. This would be so much more fun, you know. Or this is the story of the Buddha as it's come down. Or the last one, doubt. What makes you think you have a right to become enlightened? And the Buddha is just sitting there through it all until finally he touches his hand to the earth and says, as the earth has witnessed the countless lifetimes, I've been on this journey, I have a right to be enlightened. Earth quakes, Mara leaves, and here we are practicing 2,600 years later what he discovered then. And here we are practicing, sitting on our cushion or chair or bench, and just letting Mara's army or whatever comes through, just come through and not be frightened or seduced and just be present for our experience, letting it all come and go without taking it personally. So to see, oh, the mind has a mind of its own. As you have more understanding of that, you have compassion for this predicament that we find ourselves in. Like I was talking yesterday about being a laboratory. This is your laboratory to discover the human condition. And so not only do you have compassion for this mind and body process, but you start to see we all share. Look at all those hands that went up at the beginning of this talk. We all share this commonality of a mind and a body that follows its own laws, and we feel a connection with others in the process. We also start to see some very basic principles about reality. One, that everything is changing, as I just said. Two, that trying to hold on to changing experience is a setup for suffering because it's all passing. And three, that you yourself are this changing experience, and you see through that sense of separation of yourself and everything around you. We'll get more into this as the retreat goes on. So those are some of the benefits of mindfulness and how mindfulness works. And we could spend each evening the whole retreat talking about the benefits of mindfulness, but I'll just leave it at that and let you look for yourself and discover what else is there. But as we are exploring and going on this journey, we have to be willing to open up to the whole show, not just for a sweet sitting, as I said, they change anyway, or trying to make some experience happen. But when you aren't distracting yourself, as most of us do most of the time, we start to see all the things inside that are that we usually numb ourselves from, or that plague us, and we feel our sadness, or our fears, or our worries, or our loneliness, or our anger, or our wanting, and all of those parts of being human as well. That's part of this package. You can't just say, oh, I'll take the good stuff. No, in fact, the paradox is the more you're willing to open up to the whole show and see your own humanness, the deeper your understanding of the human experience. So part of it is learning to have this attitude of openness to experience, which is different from the usual way we relate to experience, which is contracting around experience. If we like it, we want it and try to hold on to it. If we don't like it, we push away and contract away from it. This is going against the stream, that phrase is sometimes used, where we're learning to open to experience, which is a very profound shift in relationship to the human condition. It's all about contracting or expanding. All of the difficult states, fear and anger and worry and greed and all of those, are states of contraction. All of the beautiful states, love, generosity, compassion, peace, joy, are states of expansion. And so this is what we're learning. We're learning, instead of contracting away from experience, to expand and soften around it. And this is where kindness that has been spoken about, or tenderness, is so key. Loving awareness, making friends with the moment. This is a quote, I might have read it here last year. It's one of my favorite quotes in recent years. It's from an old classic book that was very meaningful for me in the 70s, I'm dating myself a bit, called The Lazy Man's Guide to Enlightenment. Good title, isn't it? Very thin book, by the way. But this is what he says. This is the gist of the book. So you don't even have to read The Lazy Man's Guide. This is the setup guide, setup page for The Lazy Man's Guide. This is the essence of it, which I feel is really the essence of practice. The basic function of each being is expanding and contracting. Expanded beings are permeative. Contracted beings are dense and impermeative. We experience expansion as awareness, comprehension, understanding, whatever we wish to call it. When we're completely expanded, we have a feeling of total awareness, of being one with all life. At that level, we have no resistance to any vibrations or interactions with other beings. It is timeless bliss with unlimited choice of consciousness, perception, and feeling. When a being is totally contracted, they are a mass particle completely imploded. To the degree that they are contracted, such a being is unable to be in the same space with others. So contraction is felt as fear, pain, unconsciousness, ignorance, hatred, evil, and a whole host of unpleasant feelings. At an extreme, they have the feeling of being completely insane, of resisting everyone and everything, of being unable to choose the content of their consciousness. Of course, these are just the feelings appropriate to mass vibration levels, and they can get out of them at any time by expanding, by letting go of all resistance to what they think, see, or feel. You will undoubtedly have many moments of contraction. That's just the way the system works. When it's unpleasant, we contract against it. And we're learning to soften, to understand that contraction, and to bring some tenderness, kindness, love. That's why that's such a key ingredient, because it starts to soften enough so that we can see more clearly. And here's a principle that I find key to this movement towards expansion. We can be frustrated when we're contracted and want to just open our hearts and feel the love that we did 2 days ago or 3 months ago or whenever it was. And there can be a frustration at that discrepancy. But you don't have to go for an explosion of open-heartedness. You don't have to have any kind of an agenda for how big you want your heart to be. All you need to do when your heart or your mind or your body is contracted is have the slightest movement towards softening and expansion, which comes from just seeing clearly with kindness, oh yes, contracted, oh, here's sorrow, oh, here's fear, let me hold it with kindness and wisdom, and just in the slightest moving in the direction of that softening, and then you pay attention and notice, oh, I can soften around this. Oh, and the more you pay attention to that, the more life you give it. Whereas if there's any kind of judgment for the contraction, what are you doing? Just adding on more contraction. Or as the teaching is said in the Buddha's teaching, the first contraction is painful enough. It's like being shot with an arrow or a dart. It's an image that he gives. But then judging it, what a pathetic meditator I am, is like shooting the second arrow on top of the first. You don't need to do that. But when you see, oh, here's contraction, how can I hold this? How can I soften it? What do I need to get some space? Whatever it is, whether it's being mindful or going for a walk in nature or just even having a cup of tea and chilling out in the support of your getting some space, then you start that other direction. And you see that you have that capacity. And of course, you can't and shouldn't be open all the time. There are times that we need to protect ourselves, or there are times that we need to allow for all the feelings to be there, or there are times we need to just take a break and not go there. But the more we are little by little learning to open to the package, the whole package, the more fearless we are. This takes courage. This process and this journey takes courage. As we're facing our demons, as we're facing our fears, this is what Robert Bly, a wonderful poet and expert on Kabir, he wrote a book on Kabir poems, and a Jungian, he says, any part of our personality that we do not learn to love will become hostile to us. You get angry at your anger. You get frustrated by your frustration. You need to embrace it all. It doesn't mean you like your fear or your demons, but you love like a mother would hold a child who's having a tantrum, telling that child, just cool it, kid, relax, is not going to be the way. What does that child need? Just to be held tenderly and comforted. So that's the key, the courage to open to it all and coming to terms with all of those places that we'd rather not see. This is a poem I love. by Jennifer Wellwood, who's a teacher in her own right, married to John Wellwood, who's no longer alive, who's also a wonderful teacher. This poem is called Unconditional. Willing to experience aloneness, I discover connection everywhere. Turning to face my fear, I meet the warrior who lives within. Opening to my loss, I gain the embrace of the universe. Surrendering into emptiness, I find fullness without end. Each condition I flee from pursues me. Each condition I welcome transforms me and becomes itself transformed into its radiant, jewel-like essence. I bow to the one who has made it so, who's crafted this master game. To play it is pure delight. To honor its form, true devotion. Each condition I flee from pursues me. Have you noticed that? Each condition I welcome transforms me. This is Pema Chodron. She says, the next time you encounter fear, consider yourself lucky. This is where the courage comes in. Usually we think that brave people have no fear. The truth is that they are intimate with fear. When I was first married, my husband said I was one of the bravest people he knew. When I asked him why, he said because I was a complete coward, but went ahead and did things anyway. So, seeing who we are is also the payoff on that in facing our fears, not just finding courage, finding the wisdom that can hold it. And that's, you know, the classic hero's journey in that Joseph Campbell writes about, but is in most mythology or great quests, whether it's the Buddha on his quest, or Jesus, or Luke Skywalker in Star Wars, one of my favorite movies, The Empire Strikes Back, where impetuous Luke says, I want to be a Jedi Master. And Yoda says, well, wait, you're not quite ready for it. And he says, I want to. He says, okay, here's your lightsaber. You go in there and face all your demons, and one of you is going to come out of alive. That's how you become a Jedi Master. So facing your fear, you find your courage, and you also see all the beautiful qualities that are underneath those demons. My son Adam, who's now 38, he went on and quite the yogi and meditator, as he's become. He went on a retreat a number of years ago, and he sat for a month. And I said, so what'd you learn on the retreat? He said, well, I learned about fearlessness. I said, oh, what'd you learn about fearlessness? He said, I learned that the path to fearlessness is vulnerability. I said, all right, got it. Pretty good. Courage is connected to trust or faith. Trust in this process, which if you've done retreats, you already know that there's something to this process. At the beginning, you don't maybe have that experience of what's called verified faith. Then you maybe are trusting something that you read in a book or inspired talk or reading that you've had. But that trust, which in Pali is called sadha, trust or faith in the process, it's not trusting that everything's going to work out. It's trusting, the way I see it, that your awareness can meet the moment when it comes. And the more you practice meeting this moment wisely, the more likelihood you will be able to meet that future moment when it comes. But if you're worried about meeting that moment then, you will likely be worried then about meeting subsequent moments. So in every moment, we're learning to trust that our awareness can meet the moment. And that deepens. How many people who've been practicing for some time have noticed a deepening trust in themselves or in life? Anyone here? Again, this is how it works. I'm not just handing a line. Oh yeah, just, you know, trust me. No, don't trust me. The Buddha said, don't trust anyone. See for yourself. Ehe Pasiko, come and see for yourself. So some other aids on the journey. As we meet all of these different parts of ourselves, forgiveness is essential. Forgiving ourselves, forgiving our minds that wander, forgiving our bodies that don't cooperate, forgiving our hearts, forgiving our patterns of thought. And the more we can bring that into this mind and body, the more we can begin to forgive others. And even forgiving life for not cooperating as we'd like it to. And this is a lifetime of conditioning that has shaped who you are. And just like you can be shaped by past experiences, you can cultivate an attitude that shapes future experiences. But you have to realize this is all about conditioning. all about causes and conditions, and you can train the heart in a new way. And it means letting go of being perfect. One of my favorite lines in my favorite piece of Dharma wisdom, which is the Verses of the Faith on the Faith Mind by the third Zen patriarch of China, Sengsten. He says, to live in the highest realization is to be without anxiety about non-perfection. I'll say it again. To live in the highest realization, when you know you've really made it, is to be without anxiety about non-perfection. To just let go of being perfect and being right where you are, who you are. So that's one other capacity besides courage, and there's forgiveness. Patience is another incredible support in this process, especially these first few days. Patience is one of the 10 perfections of the Buddha, or of one on one's way to awakening. There are 10 different perfections, and patience is in there. It's said that the spiritual journey requires a cup of wisdom, a barrel of love, and an ocean of patience. I love that. Don't worry about how wise you are or how loving you are. You just facing in the right direction and have that sincere intention to cultivate all the beautiful qualities. That's your end of the deal, and that's where patience comes in. First time I did a 3-month retreat, which they have every year in Massachusetts. By the third day, I was getting really scared. My mind was going, oh my God, what did I get myself into? 11 weeks, 4 days, 10 hours, 20 minutes to go. And it was really, 3 months was a long time. Yeah. Fortunately, somebody gave a talk about patience just at the right time. And I saw every time I leaned forward, I was setting myself up for real, real dukkha, real suffering. And I just come back, okay, what's happening now? One moment after another, not only went by, but was a very significant thing in my life. So patience, when you see yourself toppling forward, just come on back. What is happening now? Another support, sense of humor. Really makes a difference, as one of my an American icon, Wavy Gravy. Anybody ever hear of Wavy Gravy? Is it Ben and Jerry's ice cream flavor is Wavy Gravy, named after Wavy Gravy. From he fed thousands of people at Woodstock, and he was a very, very beautiful and funny philosopher. And he said, if you can't laugh, it's just not funny. And there's something about being able to laugh at this crazy mind that makes all the difference in the world. Because if you can laugh, then you're in on the joke instead of the butt of the joke. Instead of, oh God, look at my mind. Oh, look at the mind, without taking it personally. And so I really encourage you, keep your sense of humor as you do this. strange practice that we are asking you to do. And along with that, last night I talked about gratitude, about how fortunate we are, how amazingly fortunate we are to have a chance to go in deep in all the supportive conditions that are given here. And it's something, we're all privileged in some way. Not everybody can do this or even has the inclination to do it. And to not forget that privilege, and there's a responsibility for me that comes with it to really make use of the good fortune that we have to make this a better world and to just share whatever we get in touch with for the benefit of all. So gratitude is huge. I start every sitting these days just feeling immense gratitude for being born human and for having my life and for somehow encountering the Dharma. And it makes me want to give back in whatever way I can. And things that have been mentioned before, I'll just briefly mention as I wrap up. Sincerity. This is where your practice comes from. It's the sincerity of heart to hear and follow that call that brought you here, to just let life support you and you show up as best you can. And a kind of curiosity that just wants to learn and discover. I have a sense of wonder. It's one of my main inspirations. It's being like a child, and sometimes I'll imagine I'm a baby in this body about to take my first breath, or an alien that's just dropped in here. What's breathing like for these guys? You know, wow. Some of you have heard this, I'm sure. I have this birthday card at home that I've never given away. I've never sent because I'm a little attached to it. And it's this baby who on the front of the card, he's holding a booger from his nose. Mesmerized, almost, you know, cross-eyed, like, and you open it up, it says, "You always were easy to entertain. Happy birthday." That, to me, I aspire to wonder around boogerhood. Just everything. As you start to pay attention to it, Albert Einstein says there's two ways to go through life. One is seeing nothing as a miracle, and the other is seeing everything as a miracle. And as your mindfulness practice starts to deepen, you start seeing the subtleties of life and see how amazing it is. And then the last support, we were guided this afternoon, at least the last one I'll mention now, is that kind heart. My religion is kindness, as the Dalai Lama says, that to remember that it's not just about seeing clearly, it's about bringing a heartful quality that loves life and doing it for not just yourself, but for the benefit of all. So these are just some of the ways that this practice works, and really to be willing to open up to the whole package. You see, it's really good news when you get to open to it all. And it's exciting, and it's awesome, and it's challenging, and it's really worth it. I'll just close with this this passage from Shantideva that I love. Shantideva wrote The Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, which is the Dalai Lama's Bible, basically, so to speak. He says, as a blind person feels upon finding a pearl in a dustbin, so am I amazed by the miracle of awakening rising in my consciousness. It is the nectar of immortality that delivers us from truth, the treasure that lifts us above poverty into the wealth of giving to life, the tree that gives shade to us when we roam about scorched by life, the bridge that takes us across the stormy river of life, the cool moon of compassion that calms our mind when it is agitated, the sun that dispels darkness, the butter made from the milk of kindness by churning it with the Dharma. It is a feast of joy to which all are invited. So let's sit for a few moments and just let the words settle. As a blind person feels upon finding a pearl in a dustbin, so am I amazed by the miracle of awakening rising in my consciousness. Thank you for your kind attention. There's a walking now. Enjoy the night air, and we'll come back for one last sitting at 9, and we'll have a little bit of chanting at the end. So enjoy your walking, and see you there.